This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Kaira, I'm Lyle, a senior classics student at the University of Texas. I have the privilege of guiding you through the fifth episode of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. In this episode, I hope to change up the perspective of the podcast by inviting someone in the business school. I know it's a crazy notion, but the rest of the world doesn't study like the majority of this podcast's producers do. In my discussion with this new, fresh perspective that this business student carries, we'll discuss a facet of the play, focusing on Creon's actions and interactions. Then we will discuss Antigone in the modern era. We will then talk about what purpose new dramatical reproductions of Antigone and new poetic translations of Antigone serve. To wrap things up, I'll also briefly discuss my experience being teacher for a day in Greek 324. Hello, my guest today will be Evan Clary. Evan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Evan. I'm a senior business student here at UT. I don't have too much familiarity with classics, but hopefully I'll have enough to give us something interesting to speak about today.
Excellent. So I'll just go ahead and dive right into a couple of questions for you. Firstly, what are your first thoughts, or what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear Greek tragedy, or when you think of Greek tragedy?
So in Greek tragedy, I just think of someone dying in the end after almost making it to their goal. And in the end, so I've heard of, I don't know if Hercules actually ends up dying in the end, or I know that the Achilles, you know, he's so powerful, but he ends up just getting hit in the one spot that he could have died. So Greek tragedy is to me like nearly getting to your goal and then something out of your control or something that you should have thought of before ends up killing you.
Absolutely. And like, that's more or less right. We're going to be focusing on is Sophocles' Antigone, and it's a specific tragic play written by the great tragedian Sophocles. And I know you have like some familiarity with it from high school, not too much, but just enough to get by. So we're gonna see how this like view of what Greek tragedy is evolves through you throughout this. What value, if any, do you think Greek tragedy has in modern day, particularly Sophocles' Antigone?
So to me, if anything, it has a lot of entertainment value, maybe a little bit of insight into what the human experience, the human struggle might be like. But overall, I see it more as an entertainment value, a way to pull stories into big blockbusters. But would love to learn more about it.
Yeah. So do you think they might have like any value in terms of like teaching us lessons? Like, do you think that they have like a moral to the story, or is it just like solely entertainment for you?
I mean, I definitely would think that there is some value to it, because if they're still around, that story has a lot more than just the face.
Yeah.
Value.
There's some intrinsic value.
Exactly.
There's a moral behind what it's saying.
It wouldn't be rewritten or like scribed down thousands of years ago to be saved from the fires of antiquity if it hadn't. So I definitely think there is value and would love to speak more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where I'm going to try and pull on your expertise. You might have some interesting insight on this, especially. The business world is full of leaders or bosses, both good and bad. In Antigone, one of the central players is the polarizing leader, Creon. One of the issues central to the struggle between Creon and Antigone is the edict that the body of Polynices, Antigone's brother, must not receive a proper burial. Now, I know you're a little bit familiar with the play, so I'll spare you from an overload of context, but in regards to the character of Creon, how would you describe his leadership style?
Well, it seems to me like Creon seems insecure in how he talks with the guard and how he likes to blame the issue on the greed for money. So I kind of have a story for this. I was interning in the corporate environment this summer, and in my internship, there's kind of two levels of interns, one that is for undergrads and one that is for people in their master's degree. And I had a boss that was over top, overhead of me, that was also still an intern. And whenever we'd have some sort of issue that might not actually be my fault or might actually even be his, it would be a direct shot right back at me instead of taking blame or taking ownership of what it could be. Or if he even did that, it would be a more an issue based on where he...
like his hierarchical position, and it, he kind of felt like threatened that an undergraduate might have something that he could gain from as a master's student. Something along those lines, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that Creon was insecure and this kind of intern boss that you encountered was insecure, kind of because they felt threatened in respect to their hierarchical position. It's really fascinating that you picked up on that, because that is one of the central themes in the play. Do you think that this threat to hierarchy can be adequately expressed in modern artistic representations, like theatrical reproductions and poetic translations of Antigone? In essence, do you think that our modern efforts to recapture the themes in this ancient play can do that ancient play justice?
Sure. So I think that it's most easily described by the fact that this is an issue that every human experiences at one point or another. You have a boss, or you have a caregiver, or you have someone who's in a position of power over you. And just creating the situation in modern representation, whether it be poetry or not, a caregiver or a leader that doesn't use that power correctly is very easily transcribed to modern day art and drama with the right ingredients involved.
You mentioned how this ancient work is kind of forced into the modern world by the timelessness of its story and of its message, and how these characters kind of play themselves out in life no matter what time period you're living in. Going off of that, do you think that when directors or translators make the conscious decision to take an ancient work into the modern world, it becomes a new piece of art? Like, for instance, when a director casts Antigone and has the set designed in a modern setting, has actors and actresses, so a co-ed cast, obviously taking steps away from the original, do you think that that becomes like a new piece of art in and of itself? Or do you think that it still is the original Antigone?
So, thanks for that question. I think that with those directors, that they're making conscious decisions about the art that they want to put on the stage. So there's no doubt to me that what they are creating, while it might have the bones of the original play, is a twist and therefore a new work of art that they have created thoughtful representation of it on the plate. So I do think that it becomes dangerous, though, when you take it too far and take away the bones about what the play's commentary is for that timeless piece. If you stray too far, then it does create issues that I think can destroy the value of the play.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying is you can call your reproduction, your modern reproduction of the Antigone, Antigone, but if you start taking out the bones, the fundamental structure of the play, it becomes something entirely different.
Exactly.
So you're creating new art by adding a modern spin, but you're creating a different piece of art entirely by removing the bones, the like archetypal characters.
You want to keep those central ideas that make the play or piece of art timeless to stay there. If you don't have that, then I don't think that it is a new play. You showed me Anne Carson's Antigone, and I'll be honest, I didn't really know what to make of it. It didn't really seem like Antigone to me, actually.
Yeah, Anne Carson's Antigone is definitely an interesting translation, and that's something that we just focused more on plays, but translation, too, is an artistic matter, and that's where authors can make a lot of artistic decisions. I think we can both agree that Carson's Antigonic is an entirely different animal. And for those listening that aren't aware of Anne Carson's Antigonic, Carson, the author, is both a respected poet and Greek professor. She made a new translation of the Antigone accompanied by highly abstract illustrations from the artist Bianca Stone. Now, Carson doesn't make any attempt to accurately translate the Greek grammar and doesn't claim to make any attempt to. But she rather tries to accurately translate the emotions that are tugged on in the original Antigone. Now, Evan, I know you didn't really get Antigonic. Why was that? What sort of critiques do you have for it?
Unlike you, I don't spend hours thinking about Greek tragedy. I think this has a really targeted audience, one that is much more in tune with actual player poetry in general than me. Like, I'm familiar with Antigone, but to me, Antigonic is basically unintelligible. It's already hard enough to read, but on top of it, I can't really see the parallels that well. The illustrations also are visually striking and grotesque, but I really don't get that much out of them. I don't really know how you can. I mean, I'm sure it's really interesting for you liberal arts people, but to me it seems like it's grasping at straws that I'm not really sure about.
I get what you're saying completely. It's not really the most accessible translation. I think it's a translation that builds upon a prior understanding of the original work. But there is one thing. I hope that we can both respect the artistic effort that goes into it. It's definitely for a niche audience. And I think it's very fresh and modern, but it isn't accessible. And it brings us back to what we discussed earlier, and that's I don't know how much it adheres to the bones of the play. It might contain central themes or try to convey the same emotions, but if you strip away everything else besides those central themes and emotions, I don't know if it can be called the same play either. So I definitely think it's a new piece of art entirely, especially with the name Antigonic. But it is interesting to see how in modernity we like to interpret this ancient and timeless tragedy. So I'll stop grilling you with questions for now, but thank you so much for taking the time to go through these questions with me and offer a fresh, non-classic student perspective on this issue.
Thanks, Lyle. I enjoyed speaking with you today. Would love to chat about these in the future.
Now, I will discuss my experiences as being teacher for the day in Greek 324. I don't know where exactly I've heard it, but I have heard that the best way to learn something is to teach it. My experience teaching the Greek class reinforced that notion. When I approached the task of creating a lesson plan, I took it as an opportunity to shake things up a little bit and throw some variety into the mix. In our academic setting, focusing on the Greek grammar is incredibly important. We students are still honing our grammatical skills and translating ability. I can at least speak for myself in saying that I have definitely not yet mastered it. I wanted to work on translations and knew that for our purposes, going through translations and grammatical issues is an absolute necessity. However, I wouldn't have been able to live with myself if I didn't include some exercise on the artistic aspects of the play. I had been fascinated by the earlier mentioned translation by Anne Carson, Antigonic. I thought this would be an excellent point of discussion for the class on just how artistically one can translate something. The illustrations by Bianca Stone, which accompany Anne Carson's translation, are also very much thought-provoking, so I chose to open up my lesson with a discussion of these. After I facilitated the discussion, I handed out papers, each with a different section of the text to translate. I had the students pair up and translate it together, but I added an additional instruction. I asked them to illustrate the scene in the Antigone as literally or as abstractly as they wished. It was fascinating to see what illustrations the students came up with, and it offered a neat opportunity for the students to explain their visual connection with the text. I did run into a couple hiccups with my lesson, though. My biggest issue was, it is challenging to set hard and fast limits for discussion. Sometimes the instructor has to know when to cut off a discussion and move along, and this posed a time management issue for me. Looking back, I wish I could have been a little more skillful in moving along and making sure the discussion stayed on track. Thank you for tuning in to episode 5 of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. This has been Lyle Paul once again, and it has been a pleasure to lead you through this. Thank you.